Well, in 1935, China Inland Mission published a small book called The Triumph of John and Betty Stamp. There's a couple of copies in the church library. I dare say their names are now mostly forgotten, but the story is worth knowing, and it's certainly worth preserving. John Stamp came from a strong Christian family, which had left Holland and had settled in New York in the late 19th century. His father was the pastor of a rescue mission in downtown New York. John was the fifth of six boys, and he went to this mission church on a regular basis. And then when he was 15, in 1922, he was converted under the preaching of a blind evangelist. John Stamp went through a deep conviction of sin, and although outwardly he was not like the usual converts in the mission who usually had been drunks and down and out, he saw himself as lost and helpless apart from Christ. He said hell became so real to him that he saw himself standing at the bar of judgment in the pure light of God. And the awful end of a life without Christ became real to him. That restless, unsatisfied teenager was changed into a steadfast man of God. For the next 6 years, he had various office jobs, but he'd woken up to the needs of the world, and he was now saving money to go to a Bible college, one that, in his opinion, concentrated on action rather than theory. Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, he thought, had that sort of emphasis. So now, standing 6'2", in his early 20s, eager to serve the Lord, he enrolled there. Soon after arriving, he read in a missionary magazine that 1 million Chinese people died every month. And the fact of that so weighed on his soul that the call to be a foreign missionary that was already deep in his soul became so dominant in his life that by 1930 he was convinced he had to go to China. The other half of the story, Elizabeth Scott, who was to become Betty Stamp, was brought up in China. Her father and mother were long-term missionaries to China. Dr. and Mrs. Scott were with the Presbyterian Missions Board. The family were traditional Presbyterians, strong on Sabbath keeping, believers in the Westminster Confession, expressing covenant theology in practical ways like having regular family prayers, which she always remembered as she grew up. Her early education had been in China, and then in 1923, age 17, she went back to America to a college in Pennsylvania, where she stayed for 4 years. And then, at the end of the 4 years, independent of her parents, she made a decision that she would go to China as a missionary. But before going, she felt she needed some practical training, and she chose Moody Bible Institute as suitable. I read that all her friends chose life mottos, and her life motto was, "To me to live is Christ, and to die is gain." John and Betty both attended the prayer meeting of the China Inland Mission in Chicago. It was held in the house of somebody called Mr. and Mrs. Page. And Mr. and Mrs. Page would sometimes have a social hour after the prayer meeting where Mr. Page would put some refreshments in front of the people who'd come, and then he would read out some of Samuel Rutherford's wonderful letters. And the one they all loved most was the one that talked about Emmanuel's land. In the autumn of 1931, Betty sailed for China. John still had a year to do at the college. And even though they were on the verge of engagement, Betty still set sail, because both of them agreed, God first, our arrangements second. And then in June 1932, the mission accepted John for service in China. They got married in October 1933. They settled down to work at John's appointed area. It was in Anhui province, in West China, near the border with India. Their baby, Helen Priscilla, was born on the 11th of September 1934. So, if she's still in the world, she's shortly to have her 65th birthday. In fact, it'll be next Saturday, won't it? 3 months later, communist troops led by Mao Zedong captured the town the Stams were living in. They were both arrested because then as now, Christianity was seen as the enemy of communism. The town was looted, John's hands were tied behind his back, and he was pushed into the post office, where the terrified Chinese postmaster blurted out to him, "Where are you going to?" And John said, "I don't know where the communists are going. Well, we may be going to heaven." Like Jesus, they were taken outside of the town onto a hill. A local doctor pleaded for their lives, and he was killed on the spot. John was told to kneel. There was a word of command, the flash of a sword, and John was dead. Betty joined him moments later. That was December 1934. They were 27 and 28 years old, respectively. They had served exactly 2 weeks at their appointed mission station. The local Chinese Christians found their bodies, and later they also found 3 months old Helen Priscilla in her zipped up sleeping bag in an old deserted house, apparently none the worse for having been left for 30 hours. A week later, baby Helen reached the home of Betty's parents, Dr. and Mrs. Scott, who were largely responsible for bringing her up. May interest you to know that that baby, Helen, eventually became a teacher in the eastern United States, but for some reason I've not found out, she changed her surname, and she's refused all invitations to talk about her life after her rescue from China. The Stams were not the only Christians to die at the hands of the Chinese communists in the 20s and 30s. They had gone to China knowing there was a communist movement against the government forces, but they did not realize how close 10,000 communist troops were to their mission station. The story of what had happened to the Stams went round the Christian world at the time, and as always, others were drawn to the privilege of sacrifice and suffering for spreading the gospel. It's like somebody said, was it Tertullian, the blood of the martyrs has always been the seed of the church. If nothing else, that story should make us stop and consider how much we really do sacrifice for Christ. And as always, the challenge is really about commitment, not just to foreign missions, but to Christ himself.